This is Grant Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Abigail Thernstrom, who is vice chair of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights and author of the new book, Voting Rights and Wrongs. For many years, she's been seen as an expert on race relations in America. And with today's quote-unquote beer summit at the White House involving President Obama, Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates, and Cambridge police officer James Crowley, we want to get her thoughts on the status of race relations in the country and what might come out of this summit. And Abigail, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Teachable moment, that's the term that President Obama has used here. What do you think he means by that?
I don't know. I mean, who's the teacher? Who's the student? And what's the text? I don't know.
In terms of what the president said, he's obviously come under fire for suggesting that the police officer acted stupidly and saying that racism still haunts this country. What message did he send with those comments, which at this point it might seem he regrets a little bit?
Yeah, he sent a message to begin with that he's a bit irresponsible. I mean, did he know the facts? It was clear he didn't know the facts. And I think as president, one thing he should do is be quiet, shut up if you don't know the facts. But two, you want to, in general, try to be supportive of America's police force, which, after all, is trying to keep us safe, and us is everyone. It's a tough job. Crowley was a very celebrated police officer within Cambridge, as somebody who was a decent guy and did his job in a very professional way.
So what should be the lesson today? You mentioned before we don't really know who the teacher is or what the lesson is or who the students are. What should be the lesson today?
I don't know that there's any lesson except, of course, the president has dug himself out of a little hole here in which he waded into something he shouldn't and ended up in a hole, and he's now digging himself out, and this certainly helps him. You know, the president said something about going to heal race relations in some grand way. Well, no. I mean, whatever racial problems there are in America, this little beer doesn't do anything for them. So, you know, I think this is pure politics on the part of the president, and it probably works for him, closes the door on this incident, and that's all it's going to do.
Why does an incident like this, Abigail, immediately arouse such passions on both sides of this issue? Those who say that this was an egregious case of racial profiling, and others say this is an egregious case of reverse racism, potentially. Why does this always engender such passionate response, regardless of what exactly the details are?
Well, I think the civil rights community is trigger happy in terms of immediately profiling something as, or depicting something as racial profiling. And I think on the other side, one of the things that was going on was a sense of class snobbery, that, this wasn't about race. This was about a Harvard professor and a policeman. There was a sense of, wait a minute, why are Harvard professors superior? And certainly that's the way the American public generally feels. What's so superior about America, about Harvard professors?
Abigail, you've studied the issue of race relations for many years now. A lot of people point out that there's obviously been a lot of progress. Professor Gates has been employed for a long time at perhaps the most prestigious university in the country, in a state that has a black governor, in a country that now has a black president. So to say that there's still a lot of pervasive racism is not necessarily the case anymore, although it certainly exists probably on some level. But in your years of study, how far have we come in bridging the divide?
Oh, very, very far. I mean, we've got a lot of racial disparities in this country that have nothing to do with racism. I mean, the out-of-wedlock births and so forth, which and the number of single families, by the way, almost entirely explains the differences between a family income, the difference between whites and blacks and family income. But in terms of racism, we're really down to very small numbers of people who are genuinely racist. That is, they judge people by the color of their skin. And by international standards, this country looks fantastic. When you look at attitudes of, for instance, Germans towards Turks or French towards Moroccans or you name your country, we are the most tolerant nation on the earth. And we should celebrate that. And we don't to a sufficient degree. We're always, you know, well, this country is still waiting in racist muck. No, it's not.
Abigail, just a couple minutes left here. Given what you just said about the advanced state of America's race relations, do you sense that we need what Obama calls a national dialogue on this, or has America pretty much figured this out pretty well on its own?
Well, it isn't even a question of whether America's figured it out on its own. Talk can be very counterproductive. I mean, Americans need to just get on with their lives, and their lives, by and large, are very racially integrated. And a friend of mine was recently in the South and kind of looking around at the number of young interracial couples, blacks and whites holding hands and so forth. I mean, Americans are moving on. They don't need talk, and talk, it seems to me, poisons the racial atmosphere. Just as talk in this incident has been poisonous, with people screaming racial profiling and so forth, it's not helpful. Americans go to work, by and large. It's a ethnically and racially mixed workforce, especially in metropolitan areas. And, you know, they get to see, so what if somebody is not exactly the same skin shade as they are? And that's what makes a difference in America, not talk.
Last question before we let you go. Give our listeners a little bit of a preview of your new book, Voting Rights and Wrongs.
Well, it's a book on a very hot racial topic that too few people pay attention to, and the central question is, do we want to make the racial divide even larger by segregating blacks and whites and Hispanics into separate voting districts most tragically, black politicians don't have to build biracial coalitions. And they really, I mean, you look at the Congressional Black Caucus, how many could run, as Obama did, run a national campaign or even a statewide campaign, putting together biracial, multi-ethnic coalition? Very few, because they're elected as black candidates and on a platform of racial identity, of identity politics. And that's very sad. And the Voting Rights Act today, which was a wonderful act in 1965 when it's passed, is now placing a ceiling on black political aspirations. That's tragic.
Abigail, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Abigail Thernstrom, Vice Chair of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, author of Voting Rights and Wrongs. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.